What's up, y'all? It's 10-3 time in Tennessee. How are you? Hope you're doing well here on this. What is today? Wednesday? We're going to call it Wednesday?
Yeah, today is a Wednesday. Another dreary Wednesday out there.
Yeah, and here's how today has started. I wrote at the top of this notepad.
Sure.
10-3, Tuesday, 1-14-26.
Well, definitely, it's the opposite of wishful thinking. What would you call that?
Bad thinking. Hump day. And here's how today started for me, by the way, joined here with Lord of the Streams, Tom Barclay, here on a chilly, not crazy chilly.
Yeah, look at Gatlinburg right now. Usually it's beautiful. It's still beautiful, just a dreary kind of beautiful today.
Now, I didn't look, but this morning or early this afternoon for the update, but last night, I heard that it was going to get really cold and maybe some snowy stuff going on tonight.
I would say really cold for sure for us in the valley here, Knoxville. Probably not going to see too much of
maybe a dust and a little dandruff.
If that. Mostly rain, I think, is what they're looking at. The mountains are going to get a good bit of stuff from what I hear, though. If you live up in like the literal mountains at the top there, it's going to get dumped on.
We're not even going to get like a little bit of that Bolivian marching powder?
That's going to be too warm, I think. Even if it does snow, you may see it snowfall.
It's supposed to be 21 tonight.
Yeah.
I mean, that's cold enough for what I would think, but I guess it would come in before that. But regardless, here's how today's going. We got a lot of Tennessee football portal to discuss. We got, obviously, a ton of Tennessee basketball to discuss after that just whirling dervish of a game last night. That was a rock fight. Between Tennessee and A&M, the Vols winning 87-82 in overtime. Which, of course, love my job, no problem at all, no complaints whatsoever. But I did leave the office last night around 2:15 a.m., so little tired today, little bit of working through it, powering through it. And this is how today started. I left the house, and again, I live just like a mile down the road. I live in Old North Knoxville. I tell everybody this. Like a mile down the road, I could walk here. And when I got about halfway here, I realized that I didn't lock the back door after letting the dog out to handle his business. So I turn around, go back, lock the door. Get back in the car, get halfway here, and then realize I took my phone out of my hand and put it on the sunroom table when I locked the back door. So now I got to go back again. So, you know, all this is on the security cam. I'm just getting just blown up. Like, it's like wife's just having a ball with this.
Yeah.
Like, basically, like, LOL, you idiot, in text. And then I get to the office. I'm here for half an hour, and I realize my emergency migraine medicine is at the house. And obviously, I mean, most people know this by now, had a medical incident like 11 years ago and had never had a migraine before that. But now after, you know, your brain kind of sort of dies for a while and then comes back and you got to learn to walk again and all that stuff. You occasionally get really bad migraines, which I'd never had before, but now have them. And I have like an emergency migraine medicine in my pocket 24/7.
Yeah.
And I realized I didn't have it. And I thought, I'm tired today. This could be a migraine day. So I had to go back again. And when I went back to the house for the third time, I temporarily turned off the security camera because I did not want to get made fun of anymore. And I know that my wife is busy right now and not watching the show, so I can get away with saying this. I did not want to be insulted anymore. But that's the kind of – so that's where the brain is today. So bear with us. Bear with us. Pardon our progress. We're getting through some stuff today. There's a lot of this that dovetails into each other, though, for the first segment today. I like a little crossover action. I like it when you're making a point about football and then something with basketball comes up, or you're talking about baseball and something with football comes up. I like a good rug tying the room together. And last night, after Tennessee's 87-82 double overtime win over Texas A&M, game where the Vols led for exactly 79 seconds in regulation, got down 8-0 early on, and it was just an uphill fight all night long, did not lead until 35 or so minutes into the game. Then A&M took it right back. Then Tennessee had a couple chances to win it, didn't do it, then finally got it done. One big thing that happened in that game five-star forward, future NBA lottery pick, Nate Amendt, grew up quite a bit down the stretch in that game. I think more than a little more than midway through the second half, I think he was one of four from the floor. So he was not himself, not aggressive. And then something clicked. He took a tough like layup, got to the lane, made a big play. And after that, it was on like Donkey Kong. He finished with, what was it, a game-high 23 points, 7 rebounds, a couple assists, 2 block shots, a big block shot late in the game too. And we're going to talk a little bit with Nate Amendt here in either the second or the third segment today, depending on how things go with time. But there's something that Rick Barnes said about Nate Amendt and about Tennessee's freshman that I think has some lessons that could be applied to what's going on with Tennessee football right now in the transfer portal too. So we'll get really quickly here. Here's Tennessee coach Rick Barnes talking last night. And again, we always, if we play video, we want you to pay attention to it. Obviously, come on, class, do your homework. But in this case, pay particular attention to what he says about who's playing and who's not here in this clip.
What can overcoming adversity like y'all did tonight, getting over the hump, what can that mean for this team going forward?
You know, we'll see. That's a great question. And I told him, I said, I think we grew up a little bit more tonight. And I will tell you guys, I don't think at any point in time when we started with this group, did we ever practice with three freshmen, you know, thinking we're going to be in the minutes that they're in. But they've earned it, and we're still going to need all those guys on our team. I mean, we still got to do a better job taking care of the basketball. We've got to do that. But I've told him, I said, we've won a lot of games here. We haven't been a great offensive team. By being a team that's really connected on the defensive end, a team that really rebounds the ball, gets second chance points, and a team that limits team to one shot. But we've got to decide who we're going to be and how we're going to do it. And again, I thought our defensive focus when it needed to be was pretty good. I mean, they shot 43 threes, and that's hard to guard. It is, but and the turnovers, still too many turnovers, but you know, obviously some of those were dead ball turnovers, and that didn't lead to points, which were good. And I think Jacoby, you know, he knows wasn't happy with his shot in regulation when the score's tied. We're not looking to do a step back three. And I told him I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt because he played a lot of minutes and turned it over there some at the end. And that's fatigue. But that's just the confidence we have in him. We think he can play through it. It wasn't pretty, but we beat a really good basketball team.
You mentioned Nate at the four. Was that simply matchup because of their size, one? And two, did he want the ball down the stretch more than he has, or was that you forcing it into his hands for him to go make plays?
He's never not wanted the ball. You know, I don't know what people say. I mean, people have no idea how hard he works, how good a kid he is, and how he's – I mean, he comes right out of high school, game plan for every game. The physicality is something that, as much as we tried to beat on him through the summer with players and doing this and doing that, it's different. You get in the game, and he's tried to play through it. He was better tonight. I thought really fighting the drive, trying to get there, trying to get to his spots. He drew how many fouls tonight? He does every night. It seems like he drew 10 fouls, but think about 23 points. But you ask why we put him there, basically because our front line's been so inconsistent. And we're going to get some consistency. We got to get some consistency. We need those guys on the front line. Like I said, I don't know. We love Dwayne Brown, but I don't know why he didn't show up to start with. I can't tell you. We've got to get some consistency somewhere. And the good thing about having a lot of guys, 13 guys you think can play, on a given night, it might be somebody else that we can keep searching for. You don't want to do that, but if you have to, you have to.
That was Tennessee basketball coach Rick Barnes talking after the Vols' 87-82 double overtime win over Texas A&M last night. And if you caught there, there's a lot of interesting things that were said there. Toward the end, Rick Barnes said that the reason Nate Amendt played more at the four last night was not because of some matchup advantage mostly, even though at his size, A&M's an undersized team. It's an advantageous situation sometimes to have a guy with Nate Amon's size there against a team that doesn't have a lot of big guys. Have him at the four, his athleticism, the length. I can see why that would be a good matchup in some ways, but that was not the main reason. The main reason was that he said a lot of the guys in the front court were not consistently getting it done and that he was going to play whoever deserved and earned the right to play. And if you rewind about a minute before that comment, also in that clip, Rick Barnes said, at no point in time this season, going into the season, the workouts, the preseason stuff, at no point did he imagine that he would have three or four freshmen playing this many minutes. Because, he said, in this transfer portal era, most people are going old. And Tennessee's gotten some guys out of the portal too. Gillespie, Carey, I mean, we know Connect and, you know, Okpara and obviously Lanier. And, you know, this is what they've done. Mo Abram, another one this year. They've gone and gotten guys out of the portal. And as much as they love this freshman class, they just kind of thought with this many guys, obviously Ament was going to play a lot, full stop, no matter what. But some of these other kids, like, you know, Henderson, Evans, they're not sure that those guys are going to play a lot. Brown, certainly. But what happened, those guys earned it. And so everybody else is zigging. And right now, in some ways, Tennessee, Arkansas, a couple of others have had to zag because, well, John Calipari just likes having five-star freshmen. He just does. That's, you know, Leopards don't change their spots. The man wants to go after what he wants to go after, right? He ain't changing. Not really. And Rick Barnes was changing with the times. Tennessee's hit rate in the portal has been as good as anybody's. Hadn't been a lot of guys, but the ones they've gotten, they've hit pretty good on more often than not. But that sounds a little bit like the situation Tennessee football might have at quarterback next season. Because everybody else, for the most part, in college football right now, getting old guys at quarterback, getting veterans, getting guys who played in this league. You look at the teams that are competing for the national championship. Look at the two teams in the national championship game this season. The Heisman Trophy winner is a quarterback, transfers from Cal to Indiana. Miami's quarterback, guy with 6 years of college experience. This will be his third national championship game, was 24-3 as a starter at Georgia, gets $4 million plus to go to Miami. That's the two quarterbacks in the national championship game. Then look at the rest of these teams around the country. Look at those teams in the playoff. I mean, Georgia and Bama had quarterbacks that they developed, but they were older guys. Oregon had a lot of young guys, but also a couple really good portal guys. And you just look across the league, Ole Miss, like old guy. That's the trend for a reason. I mean, Indiana is probably the oldest team in the country, and look where it is. That's what's going on right now. And unless Tennessee gets good news from Joey Aguilar, which nobody's necessarily expecting, and it certainly wouldn't be immediate, waiting on resolution from the NCAA then, and what's he got to do, and yada. I mean, it doesn't look great. And you've gone after a couple guys in the portal. Levitt turns down a really good offer from you to go to LSU, which, fair enough. And while that's happening, the Mizzou quarterback, you know, Bo Pribula goes to UVA. Ty Simpson, you try to convince him to maybe come back to college, but transfer from Alabama to Tennessee. He says, nah, I'm going to go pro. I was an Alabama captain. I don't think I can go play for somebody else. That's not right. Which, hey, tip of the cap there. That's some loyalty. But Tennessee now might be in a situation where unless somebody comes into the portal late, which could happen, absolutely could happen. There's no doubt it could happen. Tennessee's in a situation where right now, at least according to my former coworkers at 24/7 Sports, they said that the highest-ranked quarterback in the portal right now is Jake Merklinger, who left Tennessee. So that now, do I think there are guys out there in the portal who could be better than Merklinger? Yes, I do. Do I think more guys could step into the portal late? Yes, it could happen. Yesterday, Tennessee lost a tight end, Jack Van Dorsler, to the portal. He stepped in last night, which we'll talk about that a little bit later also. But just for context, right now that's the position that Tennessee football could be in. It could be in a situation where, hey, you got 10 stars worth of freshman quarterbacks, a couple 5-stars. Ain't none of them really done anything at the college level. And that's not what everybody else is doing. But that's not what Rick Barnes was planning on doing either. But that might be the situation he's had to. But also, a lot of layers in this cake. In that same comment from Rick Barnes, you heard him say about the inconsistency in the front court. He talked about Dwayne Brown II, who is a freshman, who has been one of the most consistent performers on the team all year. And they said he practiced great going into the game against A&M. Then he goes out there and he's having a bad night. Doesn't play a lot, doesn't start the second half, doesn't get a lot of minutes, maybe 5-6 minutes, which is unusual for him. And that's always going to happen with freshmen here and there. And the difference is that Tennessee's got 4 of those true freshmen, right? So if one of them's having a bad night, which at any given time, I'm sure one of them, at least one of them will be, they're freshmen, we got the other 3. And you've also got at least 12 guys on the team that you feel like can play. So you have options. If somebody's having a bad night, hey, he can call on somebody else, go get it done. They have options. It might hurt chemistry flow at times, but if you're not producing, you're not going to be in there. Unless you're Gillespie or Raymond, you're going to stay in there. But everybody else. And so the difference would be that at Tennessee, if you're doing that at quarterback, well, you just can't have a bad day. So you're saying that a freshman quarterback or quarterbacks just can't have a really bad day throughout the year. And over the course of a season, I'm going to tell you right now, there's about a 0% chance that happens. So, I mean, maybe you do play both at times. I don't know. And I'm not going to be defeatist about it, and I don't think anybody else should be either, but would you need to be concerned about that? Sure. Absolutely you should. There's no doubt. There's no doubt. It's exciting, but it's also terrifying. And we do not live in an era where most people now are willing to accept a young, talented freshman having some good moments and some bad moments because you know you got the next year, right? Nobody's guaranteed anything in this era anymore. You could lose half your roster. You could have a couple boosters who just all of a sudden lose their minds and they're not donating anymore, and now you got to make a coaching change. You have a million things that could happen. That could happen. And so, yes, I would like to think that people would understand, hey, you got a talented freshman. He does some good stuff, and then he also does some bad stuff, so you don't get where you want to get as a team. But you got the next year. I would think people could still see that, but I don't know that. I don't know that. I don't know that we live in that kind of world anymore. I mean, do we? It's a fair question.
It is.
And I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I wish.
Beats me.
I knew the answer to that, Tom. Are we going to have secret time today?
We are actually going to have secret time today.
Okay, so good. The backstory there is we'll talk about that here in just a second, but yeah. You'll get that secret time during secret time. Yep. But we'll be right back here on 10 at 3.
Okay.
Secret time. We were a little worried that we weren't going to have secret time today.
Yeah, there were some technical issues there for a second.
Had a glitch.
Our folks here, let me tell you, all it took was just a quick message to somebody, and then literally a minute later, fixed.
Got it done.
It's magic.
And I was thinking today, I was like, if we don't – Because, like, during secret time, I'll take a few more sips from old Jumbo over here. I'll get, even though we're still doing the show,
yeah,
it feels like it's a even a little more informal at that point than it normally is. So mm-hmm. I was like, ooh, this is not the day to be having, not the day to be having that. Old boy over here is, old boy over here is plumb worn out today. Yeah. Had to make three trips back to the house today that I forgot things. That's what kind of day this has been.
And you don't live particularly close to the station either. So.
Well, no, I do. I do. That's the benefit.
Really?
1 mile.
Okay, I could walk. Then you do live pretty close. I thought you lived
Old North Knoxville. I could walk here.
Yeah, you're.
Yeah, like I can from the upstairs of the house, I can see like the downtown skyline. Basically, it's.
I was to say, I thought you.
It's nice.
For whatever reason, mistaken there. I thought you still were in South Knox.
No. Yeah. I do. I love Island Home, and I'd like to be back there at some point. But you know, it's like people are usually smart enough to not sell their homes when they're there, and so we're trying to get back in there, and it's just hard because things don't go on the market very often there.
Things are not
I love that neighborhood.
It ain't so easy as it used to be, at least.
I love where I am, too, the neighborhood. Yeah. You know, I love where I am now. I love this neighborhood. You know, we got 1890 house, which, you know, has got it's weird. It's retrofitted in a lot of ways because it's like 1890, but also has like the brand new HVAC and like smart home stuff everywhere. But like it's still the oldest house ever.
Yeah. What I love about this part of Knoxville, too, is this is like emblematic Scruffy City. This is like the truest of Scruffy City. This is OG Scruffy City.
This is OG Scruffy City.
It's like you'll have those old homes next to some like maybe some newer, like not newer, but you know, 70s, 80s era homes, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And then you'll just have the couple of homes that are a little, not dilapidated, but they're scruffy.
I explained to people I could walk a block or two.
And
get to the HGTV like Dream Oasis house, and then like another way, I'm like, oh, there's a clown car of trash over there.
So the viewers catching us back in, we're back. I think
we are back talking about
mid conversation,
talking about Scruffy City trash and all these things. Hey, we are the Scruffy City. We are proud of it.
We are. I'm very proud of the Scruffy City.
That's who we are. A delayed welcome back to 10-3, where we're talking about a lot of stuff today because Tennessee. That was that basketball game Tuesday night. If you're watching us right now or you're watching later in the day Wednesday, the game that was played last night, I have written on here Tuesday. I have now changed it to Wednesday to make it appropriate. So now I can say that the game was on Tuesday night. And there are times in a long basketball season where – almost nothing goes right. And there are times where that happens and you're playing a team where, or in a city or in an arena or against an opponent where if you have that kind of night, you're wearing one. End of story. Then there are times where you're playing one of those maybe at home and you're normally really, really hard to beat at home. But you are fighting uphill all night and you just, it's not going to be pretty, but you find out who your dogs are. Who are my war dogs? Who are going to go get it done when it's ugly? It can't be ugly all the time or you're not going to be a good basketball team. So let's not, again, let's not confuse these two things. Tennessee is capable of playing much better basketball. And it needs to play much better basketball, much cleaner basketball, or it's not going to get where I think it could get and where a lot of people still think that it could get. And that's absolutely the truth, 100%. But also, you play 40-plus games sometimes in a basketball season, or at least more than 35. You play a lot of games. You are going to have games in there where it just gets off on the wrong foot and the other team gets confident and that team's good enough to beat you when you're not playing well. And that was interesting last night because Tennessee, and this was a concern going into the game, A&M plays a style of basketball Tennessee has not faced this season. Buckyball is insanity. These guys have put up like 120 in the game this year. They go fast, fast, fast. Fast offensively, fast defensively. They shoot a lot of threes. They press you all night long. They throw wave after wave of smaller guards at you and wings at you. And they'll give up some buckets. They'll give up some stuff here and there. And they don't rebound particularly great because of their size. But that team is so fun for a neutral to watch because it absolutely could beat just about anybody in the league by 25, and it absolutely could lose to just about anybody in the league by 25. And it reminded me of some of those earlier Pearl teams that at Tennessee that did that. That would – and I don't know if this team's quite that good, but McMillan can coach. I hope that we have time later to play him talking last night because he's a country guy. He's about my age, and he just has a unique way of looking at things. And I, if I'm an A&M fan, if I'm an Aggie, I'm all in on Buckyball right now. That is fun. Now, eventually you got to get results, but – I mean, they were 3-0 in SEC play coming into last night. They did go to Auburn Arena and win, or Neville Arena as it's called now, which people don't usually do, by the way. I know Auburn's not coached by Bruce Pearl anymore. It still has talent, and that's still a sold-out rocking arena. It's little, but it's loud because they built it that way, and they're smart. And that's a tough place to go play ball. And they went down there and won. And they were unlucky not to win last night. Tennessee got the advantage of what I think was a truly horrendous out-of-bounds call late in the game that should have been overturned and given the ball to A&M, but it didn't. I guess they just couldn't see 100% evidence to overturn it. I kind of saw it, but hey, there will be times this season, and there already have been a couple where Tennessee was on the business end of that. Hey, that's life. But A&M is the kind of team, especially against the Tennessee team, that, as we know, has some issues taking care of the basketball. And A&M forces as many turnovers as anybody in the land, anybody in the Power Four game, and more steals. And steals are different from dead ball fouls. Why? Steals turn into fast breaks the other way. Dead balls, well, you can still get your defense set. You know, you get a turnover, you throw the ball out of bounds, shot clock violation, 5-second call. You can go set your defense. A steal is different because a steal is going back the other way in a hurry, especially against a team that knows how to do that and works on that every day. So, yes, Tennessee last night in that game did probably, like individually in terms of moments in a game, there were more than a dozen moments in that game that Tennessee made a play where I was like, okay, like you just kind of maybe deserve to lose when you do that. Just the same mistake again when you shouldn't have done it the first time, let alone a second time. Adjustments that you didn't make, one-on-one opportunities on the front end missed. Just moments where they just, I mean, it was ugly. But you can't sit here and say it was anything other than ugly because at times it was very, very ugly. But there's value in that. If you fight through it and you find a way to win, that can, and in history often has, flipped a switch for a basketball team. And I'm not prepared at all to say that's going to happen with these Vols because they got to go prove that. But they do have the talent. I'm telling you, they have it. There's a reason why I said if this team will just do the little things that it's capable of doing more consistently, that is a top 10 basketball team. I firmly believe that. And people are starting to look at me like I have two foreheads when I say that. I still believe that. Now, will they do it? No idea. No idea. But they, as many frustrating moments as they had last night, that was very much a glass half full, half empty situation to look at because they were doing some stuff that you're like, how is it possible? At one point, Rick Barnes put JP Estrella in the game and said, hey, I'm putting you in here specifically, throw the ball high to Nate Amendt on this press because he's being guarded by someone who's 6'5", he's 6'11", do the math. Throw it up high to him, he'll go get it, we'll get the ball in. And Estrella walks in there, yes, sir, I got you. Walks in there, throws a bounce pass. And Barnes is like, he's like apoplectic at that point. Like, I literally just told you to throw it high. Now, fortunately, in that moment, Amen caught the ball, was able to, you know, get going, got to the free throw line, did what he needed to do. But that there were moments, as many moments of frustration as there were in that game. Let us not forget, Tennessee won a basketball game despite leading for 79 seconds in regulation. There were at least four or five moments in the game where Tennessee, which was down 8-0 after a couple minutes, and it was just an uphill slog all night, four, maybe five times, Tennessee rallies to tie the score, and every single time, A&M went on a run to answer it. Every time. I mean every freaking time. Tennessee rallies to tie it, and then A&M answered every time. Even moments where Tennessee initially got a stop, had a chance to go take the lead, didn't do it. Had chances to go to the free throw line and either tie or take the lead, didn't convert some of them. A&M punishes you for it. It just felt like one of those games. Tennessee had so many moments in that game where it could have quit and it didn't. And if you can't see the value in that, you are looking at half the story tops. Because as frustrating as those moments were, and they were, and we've said it and we'll say it again, if they don't play better, they will have an early exit from the tournament. Full stop. They have to get better in a couple areas, and we know exactly what they are. Stop turning the ball over all the time, because that's a killer. Make big free throws. If you'll just do those two things, we've seen Tennessee. Barnes said it himself for years. Tennessee has found ways to win games when its offense hasn't been what it needs to be. Toughness, rebounding. Last night they out rebounded A&M 60-35. 60-35. I don't care how much bigger you are than the opponent. You out rebound a team that is on the fringe of being ranked and is a solid basketball team. You out-rebound that team, any team at this level, 60-35, you have had a night. That is impressive. That is physical dominance of an opponent. And if you can't see the value in a game where you are fighting uphill, you are basically, you're swimming upstream from literally the first minute of that game. Literally the first minute of that game. And that is your own fault at times. Also got to credit the opponent, because those guys, that's a good basketball coach. Those guys are good at what they do. They won three. They were 3-0 in SEC play going into that game. We ignore that all you want. It's you're 3-0 in one of those wins. You go to Auburn and get it. That, you have my attention. But when you have those games where four or five times you do rally to tie it, but then every time the opponent answers, I'm not the Elias Sports Bureau over here. I don't know the exact percentage of moments in those games where the team chasing wins it. It's got to be low. When you rally four or five times to tie a game and every single time it's answered, that is the sports gods putting their thumb on a scale and saying, not your night. And that's human instinct at that point to think, not my night. But when you fight through that and you have some freshmen step up, Nate Amen, look at the little boy started to become a man. Look at that. Look at him. He might even take his water wings off soon. He might just be out there swimming like a big boy. He took over down the stretch. And Troy Henderson, that young fella, for a guy who Tennessee goes to Arkansas, he doesn't even play. Last night, late in the game, Tennessee's trailing. He toes the line, basically demands the basketball, gets it, fires a three, makes it, puts Tennessee in front. For a kid who doesn't play a lot and he's that young, that's some stones. Tip your cap there. That's impressive. There's some dog in that kid. And even though he didn't have a great night, we know there's dog in Amari Evans. Even though we know he didn't have a great night, we know there's a lot of dog in Dwayne Brown the second also. Some of these guys And they grew up, like Nate Amon at both ends of the floor, some big boards, man, big boards. And that block shot in overtime, whew, that was a man moment is what that was. And again, that putting it plainly, that's what he's paid to do. He's paid well. But you still got to go out there and do it, and he did it. And I was impressed by that. And I don't think it should get lost in the shuffle that Jalen Carey, who is historically an absolutely terrible free throw shooter, like he's played 3 years of college basketball, and he's a 50% career free throw shooter, 53%. I mean, for a guy who has the touch that he has, that's mind-boggling. And everywhere he's been, every year, he's between 50 and 54% from the line, every year. But he stepped up late in the game and hit a couple big free throws Tennessee needed and helped them win the basketball game. I think he made like 60, what was it? What did he finish from the line? I'm not going to like say have a parade for it, but he was 4 of 6 last night, which, hey, there were moments where you thought, will he ever have a moment where he goes 2 for 2 from the line? Will he ever do that this season? By gosh, he did it last night. And late in the game, yes, he did go 2 for 4, but both times he went to the line, Tennessee could have used 2 free throws, but needed 1. And he got them. He got a big offensive rebound late in the game. Bishop Boswell played out of his mind at times. And after the Florida game, he needed to. There were a lot of really only Nate Amon really could have held his head up a little bit walking out of that gym in Gainesville. I don't think a lot of those, I don't know if anybody else could. Maybe here or there a couple moments, but that was that, call that what it is. That was a dirty diaper. It was not good. You could still smell it. There's no diaper genie in the world that's going to take that odor out of the room for a while. That was bad. Bad, bad, bad. But Bishop Boswell and some others bounced back from that. And for a guy who's, they list him at 6'4", I think he's probably more like 6'3", 6'3 and a half. We're splitting hairs there, but he's not a, he's physically big, but he's not tall. He goes in there and rebounds like a power forward and got a couple of huge offensive rebounds. Or say what you will about A&M not having a lot of like tall guys. Boswell's 6'3", and he's down there getting boards, out-wrestling people for offensive rebounds, for offensive rebounds, stuff that like Dan Bradshaw used to do. So I'm not going to sit here and say everything is perfect now. I'm not naive, and I don't think, and I'm not naive enough to think that you're naive. And I'm not going to try to tell you what to think. I just tell you what I think. Tell you what I know, what I think, and then, you know, then you think what you think. That's how the world works. It should work that way anyway. And there, last night was one of those things that is much more important than you think it might be. Because, yes, a million things went wrong. But the biggest takeaway from that game, in my opinion, is that they found a way to win it. When they had a million things go wrong, self-inflicted, some of them credit the opponent. But we try to say this is not a results-oriented business. It kind of is. At the end of the day, when you overcome that many mistakes, I mean, again, disgusting. But you fight back and you win it. I mean, that can start things. It's like when you're in baseball and you're 0 for your past 18 and you hit like a, you know, dying quell, duck fart, whatever you want to call it. It falls in there for a single. Or you just hit a swinging bunt that the pitcher can't get to in time. Goes down in the scorebook as a single. You get on base. You start feeling good. Then you go on a heater. That's how it can go. But you got to fight through it to get there. And, hey, the first part can be the hardest. And that's what Tennessee just did, was play a really ugly basketball game and find a way to win it. And we'll talk more about that here coming back in just a second, because I want to hear from Nate Amon. I don't know if we'll have time to get to Bucky McMillan. We might not, but we could save that for the next day. But we do need to talk to Nate Amon, and we'll do that coming right back here on 10 and 3.
All right.
Secret time.
Secret time.
It's like, you know, that game, kind of like this show. You just, you go into it, you're kind of tired. It was a long night.
It was a long night. I didn't make it through the entire game.
But then you get going, and you're like, okay, get the balls rolling downhill. We got this. Yeah. We got this. We're doing this. We're doing it live. We're doing it. I do think, though, again, that's a classic half full, half empty situation. Yeah. Because that game, that was a 3-hour slugfest.
Yeah, maybe not the prettiest game to watch, but
especially
down, you can't hate the results, right?
Especially down the stretch. Man, those guys are gassed. They are physically exhausted. They're lying on the floor for a couple seconds after plays. Like they're just, they got nothing. When guys that are in that elite shape have to go that hard, they are trained specifically for this, but they're trained for 40 minutes. You start going to 50 minutes, that's still different. And at a moment when you're normally kicking back, having a Gatorade, sitting in an ice bath, and you're still out there on the floor banging, getting banged on, getting bumped, having mental stress, man, that adds to it. It does. That absolutely adds to it. And
got about 30 seconds left.
When you get into that moment and you power through it, man.
Yeah.
That can, I mean, imagine those A&M guys on that flight back to College Station being that close to a big upset win for them. First year in a program, get going. And that flight back to College Station, that had to be a sad flight.
Yeah.
After fighting that hard and playing that decently well and coming up short. Tough stuff. But that's life.
Absolutely.
As Bucky said, win some, lose some.
If you win some, lose some.
Welcome back to 10 at 3. We got one more segment to you today coming here live from a cold or chilly Knoxville that's about to get a lot colder tonight. But no Bolivian marching powder. Apparently only those in the mountains are going to get that. We might get a little bit more of the liquid variety.
Yeah, we may see some. The frozen variety. It probably is just from the vibes that I'm getting, not going to stick at all. You're just going to.
Man,
just gonna maybe see it and go, well, that was nice.
Yay, hey, look, there was a couple. Look, and we'll hey, we'll,
so
we'll
nice we won.
We'll have
nice
we'll have snowed. Moments of it. We'll put it on the screen. We'll have it on WBR Weather on that account on X. We'll have that. We'll have it on the site. We'll have stories on it here. I bet tomorrow, you know, we'll be able to go up there and look at Gatlinburg and see a little bit of that, pretty white stuff up there. I bet.
Yeah.
And we'll get a little jealous. See the fog rolling in over the beautiful Smoky Mountains over there.
Very smoky.
And it's, you know, that's fine. That's fine. I'll only be a little bit envious. If it's going to be cold, it might as well be snowing. Because I hate cold weather. There's one thing and one thing I tolerate in winter, and that's the smell of it. I like winter smells different. It just does. The air smells different, and I like it. But other than that, the rest of it can fly kite. I care not for it. I care not for it. I don't. I mean, Christmas is nice. I'll throw that in there. But winter can – not my thing. But, you know, speaking of – that was a lot of the Tennessee basketball game last night, but the Vols did battle back. The 24th-ranked Vols found a way to beat Texas A&M 87-82 in double overtime. And freshman Nate Ament, he – I'm not going to say he was – I'm not going to say it was like, oh, man, give him the Naismith. No. What I'm saying is he'd only taken like four shots from the floor by like the midpoint of the second half or so in that game. And then he just started taking over. And we asked him about that after the game. And you'll like this answer, Kono, because he basically said, well, my teammates kept telling me to take over. I'm like, bro, that's all you had to do was ask? Well, hey, Nate Ament, go drop 50 in every game moving forward. Is that a thing now? Just go drop 50. But if it's that simple, if all you got to do is ask, man. Although I'll say that's how I married the beautiful woman I did, because I just went and asked. So if I hadn't asked her out to begin with, hey.
Literally shooting a shot there. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah. Hey, you never know, right? Just go ask for it. Hey, you want to go get a drink sometime? Hey, works out, right?
Yeah.
That's why you got to ask. But, yeah, here's freshman forward Nate Ament for Tennessee talking about last night's win over A&M and why he kind of performed the way he did.
Nate, what changed for you late in the game? Looks like you were trying to take over a little bit more.
What was going through my mind was just that first half of the game's over. We're still in this game. We got to win it. So for me, it was just kind of focus on the possession at hand and forget all the ones that, you know, were prior to those.
Nate, for you, I think you were 1 of 4 with about 10 minutes to go in the second half. You made 6 of your last 12 shots, and it seemed like the layup kind of got you going. What kind of got you in the mode of putting your head down and getting to the rim more down the stretch of this game?
I would just say kind of the faith from my teammates. All of them were telling me, you know, just to take over this game, and they know I'm capable of doing that. And you know, to have your teammates believe in you so much, it does so much for your confidence. Just allowing them to, you know, have faith in me and just, you know, take over the game and, you know, do what I do best.
Nate, what did you see from Bishop and Felix tonight, setting the tone for you all? Both of them had double-doubles. And Bishop, what did you see from Felix the last 2 days or so? It seemed like Monday he was really active in terms of picking his teammates up and being a leader for this team.
I mean, when Bishop and Felix are, you know, playing the way they do and playing the way we know we can, we're just a whole different team. A player like Bishop, he puts confidence in me, and I know he does with all the other 4 guys on the court. So, and he's just a dog. He's going to do it every night. You know, we're all confident in him, so we just got to make sure that he knows that we want him to, you know, play his game. And also Felix, when he's active and rebounding and being a leader for our team, we're just a whole different team. And I think you guys have seen that in our, you know, big wins. Felix has been the most active player, and Bishop as well has been the most active player. So when we have those two, you know, playing up to what they do, then, you know, we're going to be in a good spot to win the game.
Nate, in the back, to go from the frustration in the first half to, you know, the 5-second calls and the pressure to the second half, I see you looking over the bench, you know, winking at your teammates, I got this, 9 of 11 from the free throw line. Just talk about just putting the past in the past and, you know, hey, I play my best ball in the clutch.
Yeah, I mean, you said it. You can't really, if you're focused on what's behind you, you're not going to be able to play, you know, your game and be able to focus on what's in front of you. So for me, I mean, again, I was just telling myself throughout the game, you know, this possession is the most important possession. All the possessions I have before are done with, and, you know, all we can do now is just win the game. And I, you know, trying to focus all my energy on how I can be a, you know, a leader, defender, make plays for us, and just win the game.
For Bishop and for Nate, and even Troy, 358 in the double overtime, they did not score down the stretch. You guys got to stop. You had a huge block, Nate. You had 3 straight line drive stops, you know, with their penetration. What was the key for you guys defensively in overtime, particularly the double overtime?
My job was easy. I was just trying to take out the shooter, number 9, not let him get any shots. These guys had the tough job of, you know, stopping number 5, stopping their, you know, downhill drivers. So, I mean, all credit to them, you know, getting stops. I was really pretty much staying in the corner, trying not to let them get a shot off.
Nate, after the Florida game, Coach Barnes talked about the team needing to be able to play when they're uncomfortable. A lot of that was on display tonight. What was that switch, or when did you see that maybe click during practice that you guys were maybe more mentally tough team?
Well, I mean, first off, the things that we go through in practice every day and mentally and physically, I don't think there's any doubt that, you know, we're a mentally and physically strong team. So for us, just believing in that, believing in our teammates. And then for me, it was just, I think I kind of got away from pushing myself and getting uncomfortable, running as fast as I can on every screen. You know, just playing as fast as I can. That's kind of been the big issue for me, is, you know, trying to play out my comfort zone, play faster, make smart decisions, and just kind of adapt to the game. And I feel like Coach Barnes and the coach staff has done a great job of helping me to, you know, play faster and get out of my comfort zone in practice.
There you go. That's Tennessee freshman forward Nate Ament talking last night's 87-82 double overtime win over Texas A&M, which, of course, as we've said several times in this program today, was one that Tennessee needed, found a way. At the end of the day, found a way. And I don't think we'll have time to get to Bucky McMillan today, but what I will do is I will drop that on the socials later, so you can go to West Rucker TBA there on Twitter, go to West Rucker on Blue Sky, all that stuff. I'll drop it there later. So I just thought there were a lot of interesting things he said, because he said basically, I loved a lot of his answers. And he said that, he actually said the same 3 words that I said a couple times going into the game, which were styles make fights. And it's one of my favorite sayings in sports. It's an old school boxing saying is what it is. But it also applies to other sports. And the way Tennessee plays and the way A&M plays, styles make fights, and that makes a fun fight. Because you've got two teams who play the same sport in completely different ways. And McMillan said, basically, he said, we're good at what we do, they're good at what they do, styles make fights, and that was a fight. And he said, you know, and he's saying we because he's Texas A&M's coach. That's why he's saying we, obviously. He said, you know, we play fast, we get up and down, we pressure you, we want offense to be fast, we want defense to be fast, we shoot a lot of threes, we try to, you know, jostle the ball loose, get turnovers, go transition, we're fast. And that's what we do. And then he said, those guys over there, they play power eye football and just go over you and through you. And then in half court, they box you. And so that game was just one of those beautiful moments of like, it was an ugly game, but there's beauty sometimes in that. And it's two teams who play completely different styles of ball trying to impose their way on the opponent. And so you had A&M trying to speed it up. You had Tennessee trying to kind of slow it down and fight it. And you had, you know, and there were moments where Tennessee would beat pressure and then back off when it shouldn't have. When you beat pressure, go to the rim and score. When you beat full court pressure, you've earned a cookie. That cookie is the bucket. Go get the bucket. And there were times last night where they didn't do that, way too many times. And I asked Rick about that after the game, and Barnes said that, yeah, there were times where they did not do what he asked them to do several times, where when they would beat pressure, don't pull the ball back. When you beat pressure, keep going. Don't just get the ball into half court and then stop. If you have the numbers, anytime you're in half court and you have a numeric advantage and you're not attacking, what are you doing? What the game is so much harder when a defense is set. Go attack the defense before it's set. And they weren't doing it. Now, in those moments, Barnes was specific about this. He said, I don't want rushed threes in that situation. Unless it's one of my just nail down green light anytime shooters. If you're green light, if you're 94-foot green light, you go. You take a three anytime you got space. But somebody else, any of those other guys, they're like yellow light guys or red light guys. He doesn't want them rushing a three unless it's the end of a shot clock or a situation where you got to have it. Or they're in a spot, specific spot, getting a specific pass where they almost always make that shot in practice. But he didn't want rush threes. But anytime they had numbers like that, he wanted them to go attack, and they didn't do it a lot of times, and it aggravated him. But later in the game, Nate Amen kind of eventually said, you know, bleep this, put the ball on the floor, attack the rim, as he should at that size. And he got some free throws. But Tennessee, throughout the night, kept battling on the glass. It never shot well, just all night. Did not shoot well all night. But when you're out-rebounding people 60 to 35, you have a little bit of leeway there, and you get a little bit of grace in your performance when you completely dominate the glass that way. Even if you're committing too many turnovers, even if you're missing too many shots, when you get to the glass that way and play that hard, you're going to stay in the fight. And they did that. And it was such a – they say sometimes that, like, games are so ugly only a mother could love them. And then some games are so ugly that even a mother couldn't really love it, couldn't tolerate it, to be honest. Maybe, or she might love it, she don't like it. But – there was something about that game, when it is ugly as things get, that does not mean a game does not have to be exceedingly well played to be a great game or a fun game. And that game was like equal parts miserable and exciting and fun and frustrating. All four things.
Big old battle of attrition.
A glass case of emotion.
Yeah.
But when you see guys out there, and I'm sure you can see this on TV, but you can definitely see it when you're in the arena. When you see how physically exhausted, like down to the nub, these guys are, and they are still going at each other hard, if you love ball, if you love competitiveness, there's got to be part of you that loves that. I mean, and again, as someone who doesn't have as much invested in the final outcome, it's really easy for me to say that. If you're diehard Tennessee, you're diehard Aggie, it's a different story. I understand that. But that game, there was something about it. It was like the competitive fight in it was so good that for me anyway, it peppered over a lot of the other stuff. Because you're in this thing, man, it's a fight. You make all the plans you want, drop all these beautiful things on the board, do all this video study, and then you know what happens? The ball gets either kicked off the tee, or the first pitch comes down the plate, or the ref throws the ball in the air. And then it's chaos. And sometimes it just comes down to who's going to get the break and who's going to be just a little bit tougher than the opponent at the end of the day. Tennessee got emasculated in Gainesville. And it did not play well against A&M, but it fought like the way Rick Barnes teams fight, got the result. That's the good news. Bad news is you're going to have to do that again really quickly, and you're going to have to be better because a very desperate Kentucky basketball team will be here at noon on Saturday. We got a couple more days to discuss that. We got a couple more days to talk about the portal before it closes Friday at 11:59 p.m. Eastern. We'll be all over that the next couple days. Plenty of stuff to talk about, and we will be right back here in 23 hours to do that.